Hey everyone, this is Staliafti.
And this is Heaton Shah. And today on the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about how to do customer interviews.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Right? We want you to do your best.
And these are specifically around what many people call customer development. And, you know, before we really jump in, I'll tell my story about it and how I got excited about it and learned how to do it. And then I'm sure Steli's got some thoughts. So I got into this a bunch of years ago. I was accidentally doing it for my first few companies back in between 2003 and about 2008. So about 5 years when I think the SaaS market and the market for, kind of software was much less competitive. I would do a lot of things around customer support, asking why to customers when they sort of had problems. And that taught me a lot about software and my business and how to improve it. Fast forward a little bit and back to like about 2008, basically about 2006 onwards, the lean startup movement started happening with Eric Ries blogging a lot about how startups should be created, especially as there was a downturn and everyone had to get more efficient if they wanted to keep running their startup. At that time, customer development came up because a lot of the lean startup principles, the original ones and a couple of them came from this course on customer development by Steve Blank, who's a professor at Stanford and I think Berkeley as well. And he wrote a book back in the day called Four Steps to the Epiphany, which was all about this process he called customer development. And this customer interviews is just one piece of it. But the way I got really, really great at it is I hired a product manager at Kissmetrics a few years into the company. About a year in, actually, when we really had figured out the product we wanted to go after in the market. And her name's Cindy Alvarez. She actually wrote a book called Lean Customer Development. And her and I would learn a lot together about customer development, customer research, specifically customer interviewing. One, because she was really good at it. Like, you know, this is not an insult, but like, she's like kind of stone cold when she does these interviews. And that's going to be my first sort of point, which is when you want to do interviews and get emotion and stories out of your customers or potential customers, it's very important to like actually be quiet. You know, if you ask a question, you should shut up and wait till they answer it. If they don't answer it in like amount of time when you want to talk, ask the question a different way, but don't lead the witness. Don't give them a specific answer or don't try to talk too much around kind of trying to tell them what to say or anything like that. Instead, just keep asking the questions. But I learned a lot of these things by doing customer development with her and another product manager we had. And just one of the key tenets of it is like, don't lead the witness, don't lead the customer down a path. And instead, just be like what I would call stone cold, which is like, basically act like you have no emotion or act like you have no opinion. And you're going to get a lot better insights from customers. So to me, that was a one big learning I had that still like is something I practice every time I do these interviews, which is oftentimes I'll even do this. I'll ask a question in a customer interview and then I'll hit mute on myself. And I might say some stuff, but they can't hear me because I'm waiting for them to respond because I like to talk. But anyway, so my story is that I got really great at it once I realized that everything gets really competitive. And once things get competitive, your best weapon, your best tool is your ability to understand customers better than anyone else in the market.
Yep. That's the, you know, I truly believe, and we've talked about this before, I feel that whoever understands the customer the best will eventually have them as their customers, right? If your competitors know the problems of your customers more intimately than you do, sooner or later, they're not going to be your customers anymore. They're going to be their customers. It's as simple as that. So interviewing in the early process, but even beyond that, this is a separate topic, but like I feel in the startup world, it's gotten more popular that we need to do customer development, quote unquote, like talk to potential customers to truly understand what their problems are, how they're thinking about the solutions out there, how they're thinking about the solution you're thinking about building, and truly just understanding the customer a lot better before you build the solution and you launch it. But as you launch it and you see some success and it grows, customer development is not done because the market is changing, your customers are changing, your company is changing, your product is changing. So you have to, in an ongoing fashion, forever keep doing some customer development to make sure that you truly still fully understand the customer or now understand the customer even better, or now understand the new customers that you're gaining since you've grown the product to be serving, you know, a much larger market or a different market. So this customer development thing is not like a, this is how you start and then you never have to do it again. You always will have to do it because you always will have to understand your customers really well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no, you don't have an option anymore.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I've done a bunch of customer interviews lately around fundraising. I've done other interviews. I'm actually about to start a whole nother set of interviews on a very specific category my business partner and I are very excited about. And I'd love to give people, you know, obviously some tips and things like that on how to do this.
Yeah.
There's interviewing that you do early on in a business when you're just starting out. So let's talk about that. And then I think we should also talk about what happens later, right?
Yeah.
When you have a product and stuff like that. So I'm just going to riff real quick on the beginning part.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like it fundamentally starts with you need people to talk to. And if you don't have people to talk to, then you can't really do any interviews. So your first actually order of business is how do I talk to people? Like, how do I find them? And so there's a number of different strategies for finding people. I can even, we'll have a link in the show notes for this one. But one of our old product managers, he has a whole, you know, thing. I think it's like 95 ways to find your first customer or customers or find your first interviews. There's an event called the Lean Startup Machine, where in a 2-day period, you're supposed to find customers and literally do interviews and validate and or invalidate an idea. And so I participated in all those. And honestly, it's just a hustle. You have to identify who your customer is and figure out some, you know, rough idea of a guess or a hypothesis about some problem they might have. And then you can create a bunch of interview questions out there or write up a bunch of interview questions and go find these people. So finding the people is really about my favorite method. I also have a bunch of audience in different places. I do have a lot of Twitter followers. I have a bunch of email lists. And also I have a lot of friends on LinkedIn and Facebook. So if I post something and say, hey, I'm doing research on X. So when I did research on fundraising, it was 2 tweets and it led to 50 interviews, which is something that's usually unheard of. Usually 2 tweets leads to like 5 interviews. And this was literally an order of magnitude higher because the pain is there. And obviously, I have a lot of followers, as I said earlier. So yep. It is a little bit easier in those cases. And I want to be respectful of that because many of you that are listening probably are like, well, I don't have shit. Like, what do I do? Right.
Yep.
And what I used to say is you are literally trying to beg, borrow, lie, and steal. That's my line on getting these interviews, because these interviews are really critical early on to figure out directionally, are you right or wrong about what you're thinking you want to build? So in the new project I'm doing, it's a consumer product and I have no way to reach this audience. And I actually don't want to use the channels that I have today and the ways I would do it for any kind of startup or tech related topic. And so what we're doing is we're going to put up a website and we're going to start driving traffic to it. It's going to be a simple like type form survey type thing. And we're going to literally ask people for their, and I have a whole blog post on this too about how to like validate your business idea. But we're going to ask people to fill out a survey or actually an application form to either talk to us for consulting, if that's like appropriate. That's one approach. Another approach is you basically ask people for their opinion and you say, hey, we'd love your opinion on, you know, how you walk your dog. Let's say I want to provide a dog walking service. It'd be like, we want your opinion on how you walk your dog so we can help you do it better. We're building something for you or something like that. And then you make them fill out a bunch of stuff. And one of the questions is, can we follow up with some questions for you? And then what you would do is you'd put up that website or a type form or a SurveyMonkey thing, and then you would send traffic to it or use that in your link as a link in cold emails you might send out or whatever it may be. That way you can ask some questions and learn, but it's still like you have to learn a little bit about marketing if you already don't know this audience and learn how to drive a little bit of traffic. Some people have actually done it on Twitter. So what they'll do is they'll try to identify people that say things like, I hate dog walking, or I'm walking my dog right now, or something like that. They'll do searches on Twitter. They'll find those people, and then they'll literally, using their Twitter account, reply to them, be like, hey, I'm working on something to help solve the problem of dog walking. Can you talk to me? And then you can either have them DM you or even go to your link. Usually having them DM you or do something like that works out better. And then all it's about is getting on the phone with them and figuring out how you can get on the phone with them to basically do these customer development interviews. So that's sort of one approach, but what you're trying to do is whatever you can to get these people on the phone with you. Sometimes if you're doing something that's like local with doctor's offices or something like that, you might just walk in there and try to get 10 minutes with somebody and ask them all these questions. So that's sort of the number one question people have, which is like, how do I get people? It's like, you know, it's a human interaction you're going for. So find all the different ways that you can do it. My favorite is still using advertising or using Twitter or even Facebook to like solicit people to talk to you. And here's the one key point. Don't ask for their feedback. Don't tell them too much about what you're doing, because you're not trying to like incept them or like bias them in any way. Just try to ask for their opinion. And one of the things, one quick tip before I move on, but is in B2B, if you just ask people about their day, like if you ask a marketer, I'd love to talk about what you do every day, you get a very high conversion rate because people love talking about themselves.
Yeah, especially if they feel listened to, which is very rare. It's very, very rare. So I just want to comment on these two points. I think that for people that are listening, and Heaton has the self-awareness to point it out himself, that are listening to Heaton and go, well, it's easy for him to set up a paid advertising campaign because he's an expert in that, and it's easy for him to tweet something and get 50 interviews because he has hundreds of thousands of followers. How do I do it? Stop with the excuses. You do it the exact same way, just at a different scale, right? So if you're on Twitter and you don't have lots of followers, you can just search on Twitter, who are the people that could be my potential customers? If it's people in marketing, you just search for people that tweet about marketing, that are marketing experts. There's so many lists of like top Twitter people to follow in marketing, top people to follow in this. And you don't just ping the experts. You see who follows them, because they're usually also in that profession. And you just interact with people, you know, on Twitter, on Facebook, on different, on LinkedIn. You go to these groups. You just hustle. You make up for the fact that you don't have a massive installed audience already by hustling and going where the audience is and interacting with them one by one. You can ask your friends. You know, we're all just two or three people or connections removed from almost anybody in the world today. It's not five connections anymore. And, you know, if you want to sell something to CTOs and you don't know anybody, just ask yourself, who do I know who works in a company that has a CTO? And just go and talk to them and see, hey, you know, if it's an engineer, hey, who's the head of engineering? Can I talk to these people? And then when you talk to the head of engineering, you ask, hey, you know, can you connect with me with somebody else in the company that's higher up? There's events you can go to. There's lots and lots of ways to reach people. They might not be easy. They might not be convenient. Or there might be, right? But my main point is, don't come up with excuses. Just come up with solutions, right? And you don't have to come up with a way that gets you instant access to thousands of people. Start with one. Just talk to one person that's relevant, and then to another. If you can get to 10, that's great. If you can get to 100, that's amazing. But go out there and hustle and figure out a way. And there's people that have done this very successfully that had just immigrated to this country and knew nobody and were nobodies. And within a few months, they had done an amazing amount of customer development just by hustling and doing the work that's necessary. So I just wanted to comment on that, you know, that anybody and everybody in today's world can go and find potential customers for their solution, talk to them if they really put the work in. And then the second comment is, you know, just like Heaton said, when you reach out to talk to these people, there's a big difference when you do customer validation or customer interviews. There's a big difference between your intent being to get people to tell you your idea is great and your intent being understanding that person better and understanding their problems better. There's a massive difference, right? And we've talked about this before, and Heaton has said this before, and like, you should care more about solving the problem than your own solution to the problem. And if you do, you will approach them and you'll realize my number one goal is to really get to know this type of customer and really get to know their problem very, very intimately. And then I might propose my current solution to them, but if my current solution is not the right one, I don't care. I'll come up with another solution. The thing that I care about is to solving this problem more so than my version of a solution. And if you come into these interviews with the intent to learn, truly learn more about them, and not with the intent to get validation for your specific idea, I think that can make all the difference in how valuable these interviews are going to be. Because you're going to get what you're seeking. If you're seeking validation, you're going to find validation. You know, you're going to make people tell you, yeah, that idea is not bad. And you're going to go, boom. My idea is validated. Everybody loves my idea. And you're going to trick yourself into working on something without truly having the knowledge that you think you have. All right. What are some beyond, you know, when you want to do customer interviews, reaching the right audience, trying to truly learn and be open-minded and be listening instead of talking, are there some other quick tips on like framework? Should it be very long? Should it be short? Are there like some questions you always use in these customer interviews that people can apply in very different ways, or is it very individual? What are some other tips that we can give people on the how to do the interview itself?
Yeah, absolutely. And then we can at least talk a little bit about how to do it when you already have customers. Because it's still the same process of the questions and everything that I think you and I are going to chat about now, but it's a little different because you already have the customer. So I think for me, when I do this, the one goal I have, the main goal is I know I'm going to have to do at least a dozen interviews. Every single time I've done it, I hit about 12, 13, 14, 15, like that interview number. And if I picked a narrow enough market, which is usually pretty easy to do these days, I start getting bored. I'm like, oh, I keep hearing the same thing over and over again. I better go analyze everything I heard. So when I thought about it like that, very early on, I realized that all I'm really trying to do is I'm trying to get some specific data like, oh, what's your marketing budget and things like that. But those are not really interview questions. Those are just like demographics type of things, like data. What I'm really trying to do is I want stories. So I love to ask questions like, please tell me about a time when a marketing campaign failed. And then I shut up just like that. And I wait and they think and they think. And they never say, I've never had a marketing campaign fail, right? But sometimes they're embarrassed. And then I say something like, oh, don't worry. This is just between us. This is really important for me to understand. But you notice, I didn't try to hint at anything. I just kept doubling down on that. Then I would say something like, yeah, you know, if it's a little difficult for you to think about a time when a marketing campaign failed, why don't you tell me when a tool failed on you when it should have worked for you? So that's another way to say it. A little bit different. And then eventually I'll get into the failed campaign because I'm really trying to understand where their problems are. It's really about finding problems. And you can't find problems unless I believe you're getting stories out of people. Because those stories, one story doesn't matter. 10, 15, 20 stories from customers about one thing like failed campaigns, that'll tell you exactly where the problem is with marketing campaigns. Especially if you just ask it like that. So to me, it's about very open-ended questions. Even if the person lays out a 10-minute like rant about a failed campaign, I love that. I want more of that. So I try to talk about 5% of the time, and I want the person I'm interviewing to talk 95% of the time. And so I'll spend way more time asking open-ended questions that aren't leading them, right? That are just very sort of not generic, but very specific. But open-ended to the point where they have to tell me a story. And when I do that, I get some of the best content. And there's a lot of other ways you can ask questions, but that's the one trick I would give you is just remember you're trying to get stories out of people. And if you can get the same category of story, like failed campaigns, if you're building a marketing tool for campaigns, then you're going to get gold in all the data that you get from the interviews.
I love it. I think that's super powerful. And I'll just reiterate my earlier point on your intent truly matters here. People will be as open or as closed around sharing these problems very intimately or not so intimately and more generically, depending on the read they're getting on how closely and how carefully you are listening and how much you care about what they have to say. If you come across as somebody who truly like leans in, open eyes, open ears, open mind, open heart, and they feel like this person really, really cares and has the time and the patience to listen and to dig deeper. And when he or she doesn't fully understand something, they'll follow up with a question because they really want to understand me. They will open up and they'll tell you some things they've never thought about or never told anybody else. So I think making sure that you take the time on those interviews and you're not really rushed, you don't schedule them in 5-minute blocks. You just try to get to your 3 questions and get some answers and get to the next 3 questions. But you really take the time and you really come into the conversation with my singular focus is to understand this person as well as possible and truly understand their problems as intimately as possible. If you come in with that intent and you ask questions that elicit stories, they will share things that are really powerful and they're going to be really enlightening. So yeah, I love that. I love that point. And I think that that's, you know, the difference between a good customer interview and a bad one is do you really care about the answers that you ask the questions for? And do you ask questions that are kind of just, as you said earlier, giving you some data points so you can run off to the next interview? Or are you eliciting stories? And with those stories, you're really gaining a better understanding of the context of the problem as well.
Yeah, I want to add that this really aligns with what I said earlier about basically people love talking about themselves, right? Like the stories that they tell you, and we love stories as humans. So for me, that click of like just getting stories out of people was like the game changer on customer development. Because when we were doing the fundraising interviews, we would just ask people, tell us about your experience fundraising so far. And we didn't have to say shit for like 10 minutes. Because they were just going off. Oh, I did this. I did this. This person was bad. And this didn't work. And then this person helped me. And then my pitch deck this. And I did 10 iterations on it. And it's like, we couldn't have asked all those questions. You know what I mean? We could not have asked them. And these calls were supposed to be about 20 minutes. And many of them went to 25, 30, 35 minutes. One, because we were giving advice to them at the end. But also because people are just going off and they have lots of experiences. And another sign that you're on the right track is when people have a lot of stories to tell you. They have a lot of content, right? You're like, I want it. Okay. So I want to give some time to, you already have customers. What should you do? Right. Or how should, what are the tips? Go ahead. Yeah. I'll start with one that really got me at Kissmetrics, which is we actually just started having customers come in and show us meaning as much as the team as possible, especially the people that didn't get out and talk to customers often enough, like engineers or even salespeople who didn't talk to customers about the product. We had them come in and show us how they use the product. And to me, that's a form of interviewing in the same way. It's like, tell us a story. Well, don't just tell us a story. Show us how you use the thing. And that was a game changer. We had engineers that literally were chomping at the bit to go fix a stupid problem that we hadn't fixed for like a year because a customer right in front of them is like, this sucks. This sucks. Look how many clicks it takes me. And if we opened it up, like I was in the room and I would tell the customer, look, we're not here for you to be nice to us. We're here because we know you love the product, but you got to tell us how we're going to make it 10x better for you. So don't hold back and nobody's going to get their feelings hurt because we're here to make it better. And when I did that, the whole thing changed. Like people were making things better right away. And we even at a company offsite, we had a customer come and talk on stage about like some marketing attribution sources thing. And he was just going off at how like every tool sucks and we suck at it. And right away, some engineer had an epiphany and that engineer was like, basically, oh, I know what to do. I'll fix this in 5 minutes. Literally, we better fix this. So then they huddled, figured it out in 5 minutes and then wrote a bunch of code and it was deployed like within the next couple of days. So this visceral reaction that you get when you do this is amazing.
Yeah, I absolutely love these tips. I think that I'll add my two thoughts or tips on this and we'll wrap up the episode. I think one thing that I've talked about before and I've written about and we can link up to the article in the episode show notes was visiting your customers, doing customer visits. And doing that and having as many people in the company do that as possible. We oftentimes, when we do team retreats and we kind of get everybody around the world to gather around a city, we'll make a concerted effort to see how many customers do we have in this place and how many of them can we visit. And we split up the team in different groups and we'll go and visit the customer just to get to know the customer, their problems, the people that work there, be exposed to the culture, and also really not just talk to the ultimate buyer of the product. In our case, that might be the founder or the VP of sales, but really talk to all the users and see the product being used in the wild, like see people's screens with our software on it and what other software they use and what their workflow is and what they struggle with and what they hate. There's no better cure for, everything that's wrong about your product than seeing it in the wild, seeing people use it in the wild and visiting these customers to truly understand them better.
Yeah.
And the second thing you just said is something we just started doing. So it's really interesting. We just hired a bunch of engineers and we were talking about how to make sure that, these new people that we hire on the product team get more exposure with our customers. And one thing that we started to do is that we have these success managers that do account reviews with customers. They'll take a lot of time and really kind of take inventory of how the customer is using the product and try to spot opportunities to increase the value that the customer gets through the product or help them with a certain issue or problem or understand kind of what their most you know, pressing feature requests are and why and all that. And so what we started just to do is on rotation have engineers join these success calls, right? That are usually with some screen sharing. So the customer shows us how they use the product and what they do. And the success manager is talking them through different solutions and how to make improvements to it. And we just have the like more and more engineers now, or all the engineers on the product team join these success calls with a certain frequency. So they're more and more exposed to our customers, their problems, and how they're currently actually using the product. So it's definitely something that I think is incredibly valuable. It's easy to miss. It's easy to put this further down in your priority list because there's so much stuff everybody needs to work on and get done. But if you're getting the wrong things done, if you don't truly understand your customer anymore, if you're losing touch with your customer, I think that's maybe a good way to put it. If you're as your company grows and progresses, if you're getting out of touch and losing touch with your customer, you're putting your business in massive risk and you're probably going down the wrong directions with many things, especially with the product. So it's definitely absolutely crucial to keep doing this.
Well, there you go. Like, I think that really sums it up, why we're even, you know, here to do business. We have customers, and if we don't know anything about them, then we're building the wrong things. Yeah. So we should spend more time getting the whole team, like, you know, having, I think a lot of this boils down to empathy. It's like, Do you actually have empathy for your customer to the point where you want to believe when you're wrong, right? Believing that you're wrong, it has a lot to do with this too, because oftentimes what I find is people deep in the company that are working on core parts of the product, usually engineers or even sometimes product managers and designers, like they don't necessarily have enough empathy, and thus they don't know what's important to work on versus what's not. And this process, even after you have a lot of customers, is really, really, really important. And spending time to double down is great. I'm going to give my tip because I know we're about at time or over. My tip is this. Don't just talk to customers who love your product. Talk to customers who hate it. Find them, bug the shit out of them, and get them to talk to you. Because those people that hate it are the ones that you really get a lot of value from. And the reason for that is the ones that love it, I'm not saying don't talk to them. You want to make sure they still love it. But it's the ones that hate it that can tell you where your thinking is wrong and where you really need to improve.
I absolutely love it. I'll just double down on this tip and share something that we do. We just have one meeting a week as a company. It's Monday mornings. It's very short. It's 30 minutes. And one thing, every team basically reports what they've done last week and what they're doing this week. But also every team reports a customer story. And some teams have this format where they'll report a high and a low with a customer. So they'll say, here's a, you know, sales will say, here's a prospect that really loved X, Y, and Z and decided to buy because of these reasons. And here's a prospect that decided to go with a different solution because they really hated that we don't do X, Y, and Z, or they really needed this and we don't have it. The same thing will go for the support team. Here's the customer that had the biggest pain and was in the worst spot because something went wrong with our product last week. And here's a customer that really was empowered and loved it and was really grateful for what we're building. So we kind of try to highlight both things on a weekly basis with the entire company.
I love that. Yeah. Customer stories are so key.
Yeah. All right. That's it from us for this week.
Happy interviewing.